The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.
Hello and welcome back to the Truck and Driver podcast. It's Matt Ireland once again standing for Dougie. And today I'm rejoined by my good friend Nick Garlick down in New Zealand. Morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good evening, Matt.
Jolly good, jolly good. Nice here. Now, for our listener, this is actually going to be part two because what happened was a couple of months ago, we actually recorded an entire podcast, but due to technical issues, not all of it recorded for some reason. And it's bizarre because I was sat in a hotel with absolutely fantastic Wi-Fi until we tried to record a podcast and it just went all to pot. So the first half is a few months back in the podcast list here. So if you haven't listened, I strongly suggest you go and listen to that one beforehand because this will follow on from where we got up to following Nick's adventures in his trucking life. So the last one ended with Nick in Australia and then coming back to Europe. So we'll pick up the story from there, Nick.
Okay, Matt. So if I've got the correct trip, I came back. And obviously there was two things at play, was that the travel bug, which consistently just sits in the back of my mind and rears its ugly head when I get despondent with the driving, which I know you can tune into because you've traveled a lot yourself. And it's a whole nother world out there of people, like-minded people, that you can dip in and out of. So having done a little bit in Australia, I came back, drove Peter Gilder back on the International Livestock, which was a real revelation. And
yeah,
it's quite a small group of guys that do or did that job internationally.
Yeah.
And we all got to know each other and wonderful destinations to Southern Europe, to Northern Europe and just all over. And it was fantastic. And work out to what was then the old East Germany during the unification. And
yeah,
lots of big jobs and working with great guys too. So did that for quite a while and then got my experience driving what they call truck trailers here, drawbars in Europe with A-frame and also the caravan type. And then after a while felt I needed to settle down and not be so, I don't know what the proper word is, but I was away all the time and you know, I needed a
filled with wanderlust.
Yeah. So I then drove a couple of local companies, Rogers, and then did Italy all the time, which meant it was much more regular. And I sort of knew when I was going to be home. But it didn't satisfy the wanderlust, I'm afraid, because it was basically Italy every week, although it was still good fun. And this was leading up to the borders all coming down. And got held up in quite a notorious blockade where we sat just outside Aosta, where we were aiming for to clear customs on a Tuesday morning. And we sat there for a whole 7 days and the Sun newspaper came out and there's a photo of myself and a few other Brits with a couple of page three girls. And you can always turn a bit of adversity into a bit of fun if you're lucky enough to be with the right people, you know. And it just brought it home that we're not the only ones who feel sort of victimized about when Europe wants to wave its magic wand and change things, that it affects lots of other people in different ways, you know. So lots of people lost their jobs when they opened up all the borders. And yes, it made life easier as a truck driver because you weren't losing time, as it were. But you lost all the social life. And if you speak to many guys who did international work prior to the borders coming down, they'll all tell you that they went from having wonderful nights out and being parked up because of customs problems sometimes weekended, which could be a bit of a pain, but generally speaking, that was your whole social life. And it disappeared once the borders opened, because you just went straight to the customer, unloaded, went to your reload and came straight back. And not only was it obviously a lot quicker, but then you became more isolated. And I think this is one of the big problems that modern international drivers face, is the isolation is greater, because we have these wonderful things called iPhones, iPads, and you can keep yourself isolated in your cab now, have all the so-called home comforts, microwave, fridge, freezer, aircon, night coolers, and guys just don't go out and talk to each other anymore, or, you know, go to a restaurant and sit down with a load of other European drivers. And for me, that was always one of the great things about being an international driver, which I feel is lost.
Yeah, because they're quite lucky in France as such, because there's still quite a lot of routiers about that are still open that you can aim for to park up at night. Whereas a lot of more, again, with the isolation thing, a lot of people just stick to the motorway, find the motorway services, park up, cook a tea in the cab and not bother with actually going out. And I mean, it can be a bit daunting. I mean, like for me personally, my grasp on the French language is pretty terrible, for months, but like most of my European language skills, but I would make the effort to go to a routier. And quite often, you know, in the smaller ones, as I'm sure you'll know, you can't just sit where you want and sit on your own. They'll put you on a big table along with whoever else is in there. And so you have to interact, and you end up having a bit of a laugh with your sort of pigeon international talk sort of thing. If people don't speak English, you can sort of get yourself understood, can't you?
Well, that's exactly right. And again, if you get to be around a lot of old international hands who've been doing the job for a long time, they'll tell you that that pigeon international language could get you anywhere. And when you say, you know, guys feel a bit encumbered by being on their own, but so does everybody else. You're all literally in the same boat, or the same cab, as it were. And to go and sit together is good for the soul as well.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have great stories to tell, and you will get by, you know. And that to me was always one of the big attractions of the job, was that side of it, the social interaction. And also finding all these places and discovering great food that didn't have to be necessarily overpriced, and fresh food, and all the benefits, obviously, that you get with that. But unfortunately, again, modern progress put a bypass in, or a motorway, and immediately you'll get weight limits, time restrictions, so on and so forth, that make it more difficult, unless you understand exactly where you are and how the systems work to get to these places. Yes. You know, and France, as you highlighted, the routiers system is phenomenal. And yet Holland has some fantastic routiers, but there's no like truck fly app. There's no guidebook like there is for France. As in Spain has some great places. Truck fly goes some way, but it's difficult to understand where they are if they're not able to be found very easily, you know, when you're a stranger in those countries. And you'd have
absolutely
Holland in particular, with its grasp on transport, would do something about that.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember as well, quite a few years ago, I took a couple of colleagues to Aston Truck Stop, which is a very well-known truck stop in the Netherlands, and a fantastic place. I know it's got expensive now, but that's by the by. And one of them said, oh, I'll put this in my sat-nav. I said, if you mark it on your map, then you'll know where it is when you're looking at your map. And he just sort of said, I'll just put it in my sat-nav. I said, no, but put it on your map. He said, no, I just looked at him and said, you haven't got a map, have you? He said, no, I've just got sat-nav. Because they said, how did you find this place? I just said, well, for one, you can see it from the road. It's a huge place. But I also know it's here because I've talked to other drivers who've told me about it. And you know, if you just sit on the motorway aiming for motorway services, you're never going to find these good places.
Well, that's so true. But again, that's it all about engaging with people. And I think also that there's very different types of people doing the job. And unfortunately, in a way, for myself and luckily for many others, we did it because of what you could get from the job, not just for the wage or because it's all we felt we could do. It's what we want to do. And I think when you've got the two contrasts, you get two very different people, and you'll have two exceptionally different outlooks on why you're doing it. So where you would go, you know, to do that job.
Yeah.
I mean, I was lucky. It wasn't about the money for me. It's because that's what I wanted to do. And the money was secondary, you know.
Yes.
And so sort of in that topic, so when I'd come back, I decided I wanted to try and do different spheres of transport as well. Not for any great secret agenda, but I suppose in part to improve my professionalism. But so I did obviously flat work, general work, oversize or convoy exceptionnel, wide loads, understanding the permit side of things, refrigerated work. And then I decided that there was no reason to particularly stay with one company forever if also I was going to do that. So I'd take breaks from international work and work in the UK. I did bulk powders, which turned out to be flour. I've done liquid tanks, all in an effort to improve and try and find more interesting jobs, because the driving side of it is always the same. It's driving. Once you understand your rules, regs of the road, as it were, and then doing different types of haulage, and you meet lots of other people again and learn and broaden your outlook. So it was always interesting. And I couldn't, as I've said, get the travel bug out. So I traveled again. And I found that, again, if you committed yourself to a company for years and years, it was harder to break from those companies and go and travel. So I'd work for a company till I got bored, frustrated, and then go and travel again, save up, and, you know. But always in a way that was done properly. Never burn a bridge, as people will tell you. And I'm very lucky. I've built good relationships with lots of people I've worked for. So, you know, it was not a problem. As we all know, there's massive shortage of drivers. You'll always get a job if you're reasonably competent. And so that's how I viewed it, Matt. Although I admire many of my peers who've worked for one company their whole lives and built such knowledge and great relationships by doing that, but there's other ways you can do the job and still see the world if you're lucky, you know. And that's how I viewed it.
So when you were at Rogers, I take it that was just tilts, was it?
Yes.
I don't know when they started doing car movements and stuff.
No. This was long before. This was the original Neil Rogers before beautiful covered car trailers ever existed and the name Kentvale. Yes. Well, in fact, Kentvale was still a company like Rogers running tilts to and from Italy and other parts of Europe. But Rogers started out because of their geographical location. They were literally neighbours to the once American bearing company, Timken, whose factory was next door to Rogers. And so Rogers started running a regular service to Colmar, where Timken had another factory. And that's basically how they got involved in international work. And of course, once you're going abroad, you soon get the opportunity, or Rogers did, to run to Italy. And huge factories like Caterpillar at Desford, JCBs, were all expanding into Europe in such a big way and needed hauliers to transport their machines or raw product, a lot of British steel, tubes, etc., all going to Italy. And then, of course, you had the whole leather side of the industry, which was Northamptonshire-based. It was years ago. And so all these companies within different counties had lots of jobs and exports. So Rogers was basically steel down or Caterpillar forklifts or JCBs down. So you were going to Milan a lot. Or as I had a blue truck for Rogers, which was, they had two in two-tone blue that belonged to their cousins, Thomas of Flecknoe. And I had one of those F-12s, which meant we were technically a subby, for want of the better description. And so Rome and Naples were my destination on a regular basis with Caterpillar forklifts, usually the 15-ton ones with the mast on the neck lay flat, and then the front two sideboards up the step missing to allow for the slightly wider twin wheels. And then everything was chopped, nailed and strapped. And then down to Rome or Naples, you'd go every week, you know?
Right, okay.
And the dreaded...
Quite interesting then.
Yeah, yeah. It was, you know, it was that. And then mixed in with JCB steel with stripped out tilts with your goalposts, with the steels in between the goalposts strapped down. And often the tiles back from the Sassuolo region, like many, many people have done, several pickups. Or groupage for Aaron's or whoever in the Prato region, John, you know, and with all the great days of the O1 companies, your Martin Truxes, etc., you know, there was lots and lots of camaraderie, because unlike the modern day, if it was a British truck, it would be a British driver.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And an Irish truck would be an Irish driver. And of course, if we were loading from Verona for Samson's at Milton Keynes, East West would be in there, Miller's would be in there, and Rogers and various other companies would be in there. You'd all run back together Friday night to be in Dover for Sunday for clearance, you know?
Yep. Get up the wheelhouse.
Oh, the cheese on toast, the horrible tea, or you'd go over the Albert and have a couple of beers if you were with the right company. Yeah, great times. And get your papers into DFG and DCS and all of that stuff. Yeah.
So with the leather industry, did you actually end up doing hides back yourself?
No, skins out. We'd take skins out.
Right.
Which was the, you know, Rogers still do skins out.
Yeah.
But, and I still believe they load shoes back too. But obviously, at the time, the trailer to have was the Super Cube, the big step deck triaxles. And now it's all megas.
Yes. Yeah, very true.
Yeah. People want to load back a straight floor. And the step always caused an issue if it was a palletized load or whatever. And whilst in the...
And you lose internal space as well, don't you, with a step frame over a mega?
Yeah, well, the thing about the Super Cube was you could basically load anything but through the side, unless it was to be craned. But that step could cause you issues unless you had the right variety of work, which luckily Rogers did. And they became very big Italian specialists. And if you go now, they're probably one of the biggest still going in two-tone green livery.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And them and Alkalines, I would say, from the UK.
Yeah, but I don't recall Alkalines in their current... Oh, I mean, now, yes, but...
But not then.
No, but back in the 80s, when every man and his dog was going down. But again, you see, this was the result of the open borders, no permits needed anymore, no customs clearance. And all these companies that had made their name on the back of it all and the ability to get through were no longer needed. And any bloke with a curtain cider could start up. And that's exactly what happened, you know.
Yes. From the market.
Yeah. And obviously there was the huge change when the big hauliers from Europe got hold of a lot of the work, and companies got rid of transport arms and just looked on the internet for a haulier, you know?
Yeah.
And we're left with what many of us would say the mess we've got now. Thank you very much. You know?
The race to the bottom.
The race to the bottom. But ironically, it's very interesting, Matt, that it's exactly the same here in New Zealand, that...
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and Australia is the same. Even if there's no outside interference, for want of a better expression, hauliers here still cut each other's throats, because it's a human nature thing, isn't it? That, well, I can do it cheaper.
Can't help ourselves.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
And I know I sit here with rose-tinted glasses and spout out all this romantic stuff, but it costs people's lives and jobs, you know, that when somebody loses their work through no fault of their own, just because somebody comes in, and if it's been done cheaper, the reality is all that can be cut is drivers' wages.
Yep, absolutely.
So I'm not going to get into the whole East European thing, because enough has been said and written about that, but the truth is those drivers were and still are generally treated appallingly. You know.
Yeah, they are victims in all of it.
Mostly, yes.
That's the biggest.
Yeah.
The saddest part.
Yeah. Because of the greed of multinationals and huge freight forwarding companies. And listening to what's going on in Germany at the moment with their economy and what's happened with the gas and stuff like that, there's some real hardship coming. Because Germany was the big powerhouse of Europe still.
Yeah.
And one of the pillars of the European Union, you know.
Yeah.
So tough times ahead, I think. But, yeah, it's quite interesting here, the fact that companies cut each other's throats to get the work and they go bust and all the things associated with that, exactly the same as Europe, you know, and America and Canada and Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a worldwide human thing. Mm.
Yeah.
So how long were you at Rogers for then?
Roughly, approximately about 18 months, 2 years I did. And then I decided I was going to travel again. So I went off and with my backpack and had a look at Canada and America. And I did a lot of car relocations. I found there's driveway companies that have cars that want to be moved, that pay the fuel.
Okay.
And I did that for a year, saw most of the states and pretty much all of Canada. Really good. And I'm going to be doing it again because it just holds such a fascination for me that they'll give you the keys to whatever cars that you're going to be surprised to get. And all they do is copy your passport, your driving license, and take a deposit and off you go. And they say, you've got to be in Miami in 4 days' time, or when I left Santa Monica, you've got to be in Toronto in a week's time, you know.
Right, yeah.
And it's great. So there's all sorts of things in life that, you know, can be done.
Definitely, yeah.
And so I came back from that, and unfortunately that just reawakened my desire to see more of the world, you know.
Yeah.
I set out to work for other companies, and I went and worked for Armstrong's from Longtown, Carlisle. Back on the livestock and international livestock. And that was great. They're a real traditional family company. It's huge members of the family in terms of numbers run the business, and the structure of it is all family orientated. And they're great, great people, you know. So it's not big flash trucks or anything like that. I had a 113 flat top, no air con, all the rest of it, 4x2. And a three-deck livestock trailer, and just trundled around Europe delivering stock, still with the same kind of friends and all the rest of it, loving the job, hard work physically.
Yep.
And it wasn't a bad thing because it keeps you fit, you know, because as you know, we sit down too much anyway.
Yep.
But that was another means to an end, because after 2 years of that, my bank balance looked really good, and I'd already bought a house, so that was rented out. And I sold the car straight away, and I took off on a 2-year round the world trip.
And fantastic.
Yeah, and I started off out in Kenya and did a safari for 4 months on the back of an old Army Bedford KM. And that was phenomenal. Went through southern and eastern Central Africa, seeing all the big four, and did safaris, did the bungee jump at Vic Falls, whitewater rafted Bujagali, the source of the Nile, got ill, met some great people, some lovely girls, I have to say, and just parted, basically, and saw U2 in Joburg, flew from there to India, travelled south and north, eventually worked my way up to Nepal, and absolutely adored Nepal. I've been back twice for trekking in Annapurna, and just loved all of that and the beautiful Nepalese people, and had a great time there. And then flew to Hong Kong, and one of the last flights into Kai Tak, the old airport, landed during an electrical storm, which was pretty scary, but it's good fun. And then I joined another group that had left the UK with Exodus and were doing the London to Sydney overland trip.
Right.
And we took a fast boat from Hong Kong to Beijing in China, which is now one of the huge big cities. And there'd not long been severe flooding when I arrived in China, but the truck had got there pretty much on schedule from the UK. It was a 1611 or 1116, something like that, a 12-ton rigid.
Yeah.
And had a driver and a co-driver and 11 passengers. And the trip was split up into four sections, and I joined it on the third section.
Yeah.
And so we went through China, Vietnam, Laos, and into Thailand. And that took the guts of 3 months.
Right.
Which was great fun. Met more wonderful people and had lots of fun and saw all sorts of interesting places and fell in love with Vietnam. I think Vietnam is just an amazing country. And
yes,
Vietnamese people, and just for a country that's had so much pain, it's a revelation, I feel. And I've never seen so many greens in all my life. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I found all the war stuff, the history of it all, fascinating. And so much to see and go out and explore and hear about and read about. And then I went to Laos, and I felt really sad about how Laos is treated and its people. They are so poor. And the West has a huge opportunity to do right, and we don't. We just take every natural resource we can get and promise them aid and all the rest of it. It's pathetic the way we are with poor countries. But, you know, that's just my observation. So Laos was really good for the soul. And then into Thailand, where I became quite ill and to the point where I collapsed, realized I needed to get out of Asia quickly because I wasn't recovering, and just got on, when I was strong enough, the next plane to Darwin, and promptly collapsed again, and took a few days recovering, just doing nothing really. I've been on the road for about a year.
Yeah.
I just needed to just chill out really and get away from dodgy water and mosquitoes and all the rest of it. So ended up in Darwin, and then did a camping trip all the way down the West Coast, which was another revelation. Just beautiful, and snippets of it are always with you. And I'll never forget, we were sat around the fire one night, and the guide said, so do you all feel safe? And one of the, I think she was a Dutch girl, had said, you keep saying there's snakes everywhere. And he says, well, there is, you're surrounded by them. And he just put his hand in the long grass and pulled out a brown snake, which is really venomous and dangerous, but they're frightened of us. They won't attack you unless they're cornered or feel threatened, you know? So, and he just proved the point. And it was just great fun. So ended up in Perth, made lots of friends with trucks, obviously, because the Aussies are so easy going, did trips in trucks and relocated vehicles in Australia. And then took myself off to New Zealand, had great times in New Zealand, met up with old friends that I hadn't seen for years, and partied hard, and then flew to the States, whereupon I got myself to Antigua in West Indies, because that's where I was born. So I was in my early 30s by the time I actually got back there, and they weren't going to let me in because I had the old blue British passport and I had no accommodation booked and all the rest of it, and went through a huge interrogation with these guys because it was Carnival and they don't want backpackers. They want, you know, these all-inclusive sandals resorts sort of thing.
I
was just a bum with a backpack to them, and it wasn't until I said, I can't believe you're not letting me in, and this is my home. And they said, what do you mean home? And I said, well, look at my passport, I was born here. Of course, that instantly changed everything, and I was welcome home, brother, and in you go, you know. So, and you know, 2 months later I was back in England, and that's when you realize, if you go away, to you nothing has changed, but your world and how you see things and your life and your experiences has changed exponentially. And you'll get this, Matt, like I've said before, I can't speak highly enough as an individual to go traveling, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Makes a much better person of you too, I think.
Oh yeah, I believe so as well.
So, yeah. So did all that, came back and then thought, what am I going to do now? So I tried to work for companies as an employee, which I found, obviously after that amount of time of being away, I did UK work. And then I realised that other companies that I did know wanted a driver for holiday relief or whatever. And I did 10 years of being self-employed, which I combined with something very new to me, which was writing for the then truck magazine. Starting the long distance diary feature, which was, I felt, an absolute honor. Number one, because I have no qualified education to speak of, but that feature, the long distance diary, like many, was what really got me into long distance transport and trying to see what I could, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Who are you driving for? Obviously self-employed, doing a long distance transport. So lots of different
people. Self-employed. Obviously, I used Rogers because they knew me or I knew them, and that they were my first long distance diary.
Yeah.
And then I got to know Charles Russell. I got to know the Gilders. Obviously, I knew Peter and I did know Gordon Gilder, but I then worked for them. I did 8 Christmases on the bounce for them.
Right.
Away with fridge work, you know, with fresh lamb and that. And then that's how I ended up working for H.C. Wilson's, because my brother lived in Ipswich, and I just called in on the off chance. I'd met Andy years ago when I first came back from Australia, the very first time, and he'd since gone and lives in Australia now. So I just called in to take some photos of their trucks. And the next minute, I was their holiday relief driver. Because I had left-hand drive experience, didn't mind being away. But I said to them, to Graham and Simon at the time, look, I've never loaded a machine. I've not done, you know, chaining down to your sort of standards. And they said, will you learn? And I said, yeah. And they said, you'll be fine. And at the time, they have this most wonderful bunch of drivers, mostly very long-serving men who'd been with the company and shown such loyalty. And sadly, there's only a couple of those guys left now, and just a wonderful environment. And they had lots of jobs, usually to Germany, where there was at least 2, 3, 4, 5 trucks on each job, be it a tower crane coming back or other jobs like that that involved more than one vehicle. And the social side, it was like exactly what I'd always thought truck driving should be. And at the time, they were still coming down off the we'll go anywhere kind of principle, whereas now it's pretty much that there's a set pattern. If you know how they operate, you'll get what I mean. So everything revolves around Germany, which is fine, you know. So, and they were still on the old edge of going anywhere, because they've done Russia, Turkey, they've been everywhere back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
They still did a tiny bit of that, but nothing like. I mean, I went to the Ukraine for them, did a story in the magazine. And, of course, I then got to take their beloved 141 to shows all over Europe.
But
Wilson's being Wilson's, you had to go out loaded and it had to pay for itself.
Oh, yeah.
So I got such kudos, and I felt so privileged to go and load it and then take it into Germany or Holland or wherever I was going, unload, reload, and then go to a show, because that gave you, amongst the other show guys that just turned up with something polished, they were absolutely gobsmacked that you'd worked this old girl, you know, and was still working it, you know. So, lots and lots of fun, for which I'm very grateful to them. And so I got to know Charlie Russell, got to know the Wilsons, Gordon Gilders and his boys who now run it, Willie Gilder. And I worked for another guy who just had a very small, nondescript Mercedes 12-tonner fridge van. And that was a beautiful job, collecting soil samples frozen from all over Europe. And you'd head off to France and then worked your way down one side of France into Spain, down through central southern Spain into Portugal, and then back up Spain, France, into Germany, unload, then start loading in Germany, Holland, Belgium, possibly Denmark, and then unload again in Germany, and then reload and come home. Two and a half weeks at a time, driving this lovely little truck, going to farms and all that sort of thing. It was great. And of course, the routier's lifestyle was very prevalent.
Yeah.
And that was another job I did while I was self-employed, you know, and then I did a year basically for Grampian. I got to know Michael Lacey through the shows, and he said, oh, why don't you do a Christmas for us? So I went to Las Palmas for a Christmas, had Christmas at the on the high seas. And then I got back and he said, do you want to go to Tunisia? So I said, oh, that'd be nice. And then got back and he said, oh, do you want to go to Greece? And got back and it just went on and on and on. And that was all through their time of the ending of Grampian International and then Kirby Motors and then the new Grampian Continental. And then it's now Essex partly again and all the rest of it. So that was, you know, interesting times. And I did that for the year and then came back and then decided, you know, calm down, be a bit more sensible and be at home for Christmas because that was my ninth year being away. I went and worked for Wilson's and I said to them, look, I'm thinking about a full-time job and settling down, as it were. And they said, just carry on as you are, you know. So I ended up getting my first brand new truck, which was for me at Wilson's. And although they run V8s, it wasn't about the truck. I had a 480 and then my last one was a brand new 500. I didn't have it new. I had it 3 months old. But you don't need big power for what they do all the time. So but it's about the load you carry. And there's some great guys on there who taught me a lot about load security and how to strap and sheet awkward stuff. And there's an awful lot of experience amongst those men, you know, and sadly a lot of it's dying out, obviously, as they leave, retire, you know. But that they really, and I thought it was going to be difficult because I'm not Norfolk, I'm not Suffolk, I'm from Northampton, but they were really good with me. And I've got nothing but, you know, praise and adoration for most of the guys on there. So,
excellent.
That was a lot of fun. And then I thought, do you know what? I need to do more traveling again. So I did leave them for a short spell and go back to Australia and New Zealand. But I realized that I was getting older and couldn't keep doing the backpacking sort of thing. So would have to do it differently. And whilst back at Wilson's, I thought, do you know what? There must be something else I could do. And I came out to New Zealand for a show with a mate. And just by pure fluke of a chance, met the guy who runs the transport here and was offered a job, which was pre-COVID, you know. So one of my better traits is usually keeping in touch and did so. And after COVID was all finally resolved, here I am living and working in New Zealand. So I traveled around New Zealand and in his vehicle, he kindly lent me. And just, oh man, Kiwis are so friendly and helpful, eh?
Yeah.
And made lots of new friends like I lucky enough to do, and then came home and bummed around for a little while, a little bit lost, and trying to sort out a visa to come out here. And then, of course, COVID struck, and the world changed. So I was sort of sat at home thinking, what am I going to do? I can't go to New Zealand. So I took a job working for one of the big DIY chains, which during COVID became an essential supplier of whatever, plumbing supplies, whatever ruse it was, and didn't miss a beat all the way through COVID. So I was really lucky, although I disliked the job intently. It was a good job, but not for me. But I stuck it out till the end of COVID and then just thought, right, I'm going to take myself off and did a little bit more, so what I call small-term travelling, just back out to Oz for a couple of 3 months until things had settled down, and then came home, started again for Wilson's, worked hard, saved up, and it got to the point where I thought, maybe I will stay and stay here, because there was a hardcore bunch of us and we had a great social life, real good interaction. Mr. Jeffrey Tarbin, John Franks, Mike Tasker, Piglet. You'll probably know a lot of these guys anyway, but just wonderful people to work with. And then I got the offer to still come out to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And as we started off chatting to us, you know, ourselves, I thought, I've got to do this. I have absolutely got to take this opportunity. And yeah, I did. So here I am, you know, and I've I've been here a good year and a half already. And yeah, it is an amazing country. Sadly, if you like, not big enough for my horizons in some respects. But the joy of not having tachograph laws putting you under such extreme pressure and having to fight to park up and having to, you know, you've really got to plan your days to avoid silly little instances of breaking the tachograph rules and all the other rules that we have and associations with the health and safety. And, you know, drivers are so downtrodden in Europe generally, not just the UK. You know, our colleagues on the continent get the same shit that we do in the UK, although at times it feels it's worse.
Yeah.
But you can sleep at night. You don't have to worry about your curtains being slashed, your diesel stolen, being gassed. And these are all things that add extreme pressures to drivers, you know, irregardless of what lads might tell you. It's true. It does put you under pressure.
Yeah, definitely.
So here I am, and it's pretty good, except for this morning because we lost the rugby again. So
You can't have it all, Nick.
No, you can't. You're right. But and then, of course, you see, I've got the joy of Australians on my doorstep. So I've already had, you know, two trips to Oz, one at Christmas and one just the other week, as we said. And I'm absolutely certain there'll be more next year, you know.
Excellent. Yeah, brilliant. Well, perhaps we'll check in with you again next year for another podcast edition.
Well, that'll be cool. I fly home on the 21st of December.
Yep.
I now find myself, and this will sound terrible, but people who've been away will get this, I'm so excited about Christmas, like I used to be when I was a boy, because I can't wait to see everybody.
Yes, you know? Everyone will be in the festive mood.
Oh, mate. Like, it's going to be awesome, you know?
Good.
Yeah. Just can't wait.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Well,
it seems strange talking about Christmas, but we are into November already, which is quite scary. So
yeah,
there we go. So right, we'll wrap this one up then, Nick. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, we'll hopefully chat to you again sort of next year and see what's going on the other side of the world.
All right, Matt. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, mate. Speak to you soon.
Yeah. Cheers, buddy.
Ta-da.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.